The name of the memoir is Dust to Dust. It is published by Echo. Benjamin Bush, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
It is it's a great pleasure to have you with us. You know, you look at your credits of a writer and an actor and a film director and a visual artist, and also, of course, that of a soldier, having served two tours of combat duty as a Marine in Iraq. At what point did you think that this was something that you wanted to write about in a cohesive form, a beginning, a middle, and an end type memoir?
Yeah, you know, I never thought I would write a book. That was always my father's domain in some ways. My mother, of course, a librarian, so I was surrounded by books. But I didn't think that this was going to be the medium by which I would explore myself. I always thought it was going to be in film. But war gave me only writing to use as a communication, where we were in Ramadi especially and during the invasion. I simply didn't have any other way to, in some ways, explain my place in the world, what was really happening, and what I was thinking. And I began then to write letters home. And I think it was those letters that began my voice, which I then found was probably going to be the best way to discuss my perspective on life. It just ends up happening to be that this memoir is my life, is my perspective. But what I'm very much hoping is that it makes everyone think of their own as they read it.
So it became clear to you, I assume, very early that this would not be chronological, that you would do it around the elements that you have written the book around: arms, water, metal, soil, bone, wood,
yes,
and so forth.
You're on to me. Yeah, I knew that I couldn't use the conventional form of memoir, which usually is a linear progression of chronological events in someone's life. I wanted to, in some ways, replicate the way we remember, which is not chronological so much as it is based off of themes. You know, when you think of one thing, even an object that's been in your life, you can trace it in memories. And so there have been a number of elements that have always been very fascinating to me. Stone, I was a stonemason. Water, I grew up near a river. Soil, my mother was a gardener. Wood, I spent a lot of my time in the forest. And so all of these elements began to really provide a structure where I could explore my memories. And within each chapter, which of course are one of these elements, I begin somewhere in my youth and move chronologically through that theme to some point later in my life. But the next chapter, the next theme, begins again in my youth. And I thought that that was the best way to explore my past in some ways. And also, in some ways, for readers, that they would be able to find their own themes and follow themselves back into their childhood, hopefully. Childhood's a great place.
Yeah, I mean, because you seem to use it, and then almost as with a natural sense of following that stream or brook to take you on a journey to where you are now.
Yeah, I think all good narrative is a journey. All good films are journeys, whether it's within yourself or geographically, and mine is, of course, both. Yeah, I find that fascinating, that we are on this journey, all of us, independently and together. And you know, this book is kind of born of the hope that our memories can survive us. You know, I know that we're brief on this world, but I don't want to believe it. And I want to hope that our profound discoveries extend further beyond us. In some ways, also, that those who are lost to us are not gone. And I think in writing this book, I had to spend so much time in my memory, so much time in my childhood and my young adulthood, that I suddenly realized the true power of memory, in that I was able to restore my parents, both of whom I've lost. And I lived in my childhood for a little while, and I got to say, it was a great place to go.
Does I mean, the old saying being hindsight is 20/20. And do you look back at these at the times with your parents more fondly than perhaps you had initially remembered them?
I think you're colored by sentimentality in some ways. I think you're right that some things which at the time as a child were tragic events. The throwing away of my bottle cap collection and things like that, which appear through the book as what would normally in a regular family just be, the event of the day.
Right.
These things happen, they pass us by. But as a child, it was an incredible loss of great effort on my part. And looking back at it, of course, I have context now. I have an understanding of parenthood now, and also of the value of certain objects in our lives. And my perspective has changed. I can't deny that that I view some things, although they are, they were bad times, as somehow informing good things in retrospect. But I think what I've found also is that I'm still very much who I always was. All these personalities that I seem to have, all these different careers that are always associated with me, were always there fairly young in their undeveloped state. And it was just a natural progression of realizing that these things were what I was attracted to, and these forms of expression were things I was always working through.
In looking at your childhood, it was so focused on the natural world. I mean, you would literally dig in the soil.
Yeah.
And that's where we talk about the somewhat random nature, how it could be conceived or thought of as random. But for you, it sort of all goes back to that, doesn't it?
Yeah, and for me, it was always very deliberate. The randomness of the world around us is what we've always tried to control in some ways by only comprehending some of that. The fact that we're on a spinning orb that's part of, an exploded galaxy, we don't tend to dwell on that because that really puts things in perspective, the brevity of everything, the transience of our lives and of our labors. And I wanted to believe that my labors were always cumulative, that I was building on something, that I was building a pyramid that would survive. Somehow what I was doing was not time wasted or lost. It was very deliberate time building something. And I think artists all in some ways feel that. They're struggling with ideas that they hope are larger than them and that survive them. And even as a young kid, when I built a fort, I didn't build it to be temporarily occupied. I built that fort to defend whatever piece of ground it was near forever. And I've always had that strange mentality that that I wanted to save everything. I wanted everything to live in perpetuity. I hated the fact that everything is so impermanent. And I think there's a lot of that in this book where I'm yelling at the universe a little bit, just telling it to stop.
How much of that do you think is genetic?
I couldn't tell you. I was adopted as a few days old baby, and I was embraced into a glorious life with the only people I consider are parents. I didn't get from them genetically what I've become.
Right.
My father, being a writer, passed no genes to me, but he certainly passed an environment of literacy and a discussion about the importance of words. And I don't know what's inborn, which I think is probably more your question.
Right.
I don't know how we are fated in some ways to be who we'll become. You wonder about, if you take this kid out of this environment, is he going to be a different kid? Is he going to want different things? Are they going to achieve different results? And you wonder about education. You wonder about all those things. And I can't imagine that I would be anything other than what I am in some ways, because I was so young. It was so clear to so many people that these were all my urges. And it's just been a long time coming in getting to explore them, I think, professionally, if we were to say it professionally. Although, as a seven-year-old, I thought I was a very professional fort builder.
When did you make the conscious decision that professionally you wanted to be a soldier?
I joined the Marines right after college, which, of course, is one of the strangest transitions in history, because I was at Vassar College in Poughkeepsie, not known for producing a number of infantry officers in the Marines. And I was, in fact, the first. But I had always been drawn to the military. I think my parents thought that once I was off as an art major at Vassar, they were finally safe from that impulse to serve in uniform, to live in a land of guns. But for me, I was never sated from that. There wasn't something that could replace that instinct. And I don't know where it comes from. I've said before, I don't understand duty. I just believe in it. And I think it drew me into the Marines in a way which was very satisfying in some ways. I enjoyed being a Marine. I loved the Marine Corps. It had its problems, and it's certainly not for everyone. And the last place you would think would harbor artists. But there was something about it. The two disciplines, everyone kind of looks at you and says, well, artists have a different view of the world. It's kind of the sense that they're unstructured, and that Marines are the opposite entirely, that they have this ruthless sense of structure. And I kind of disagree. I think that that both artists and good military service members have to have incredible discipline. And I learned that when I was at Vassar, because my professors were very serious in their work. They worked at painting or printmaking all day, any moment they had. And seeing that sense of discipline, the fact that they had to constantly toil at their idea, and that they had to provide this intellectual structure for themselves, was interesting to me. For me, the sense of discipline in both my art and in war was in some ways intertwined. I was not able to extract one from the other, and I think that one feeds off the other. I think even if you look at my book tour, it feels a little bit like a deployment.
Very much. Very much. So
it's just, you know, that's the way my head works. You know, I foresee in some ways these roads, and if they're not there, I build them, and if they are, I travel them.
You are the son of a novelist, and your father, you say that your father had chosen words over war. So do you feel that was a choice that you didn't have to make ultimately? You got to do both.
I did. In some ways, I think the conditions under which I began writing required a war. I don't know that I would have found a voice in language, in written language, had I not been immersed in a place where I had no other alternatives. My father was, well, you talk about instincts and what's born into us. I think he couldn't help but write. If you had left him on an island, he would have written in sand. There's just no way that he wouldn't have written. It was what drove him as a person. And writing was not what drove me as a person, but communicating perspective always has been. As a photographer, that's what I do. As a filmmaker, that's what I do. And this is what this book does in some ways, is it gives my perspective while encouraging what I'm hoping is everyone else to kind of look at who they are, where they are, their place in the world, and their place in time, and find in this book themselves.
Loss is such a part of this book, and of course such a part of war and of being a soldier. And I assume that helps in the meditation in the writing for you.
It was, you know, my parents were both I say lost to me, and of course the book explains how they're not gone. But but lost, yes. I'd come back from a very violent tour. I got home on my daughter's first birthday, and I was, you know, discovering fatherhood. And right thereafter, my father died while I was on the set of The Wire. And, I just believed it. I think the power of the beliefs of childhood are so resonant in us, they're so built into us, that the possibility that our parents are mortal doesn't occur to us even while it's happening, even while our parents are sick, because we're formed by their constancy. They're there to protect us, and we believe that they'll always be there to protect us. And I'd lost friends in that tour in Iraq, the second tour in Ramadi, very close friends and up close. And I was just dropped into this world of absolute loss, which felt senseless. And it was a struggle to find meaning in loss for me at that time. And once again, I think this book kind of speaks to the fact that I took shelter in memory. And it took me a while to discover the power of memory and the endurance of human spirit by way of memory, which is what this book is also very much about. It is a meditation on loss. It is a meditation on endurance and preservation. I'd be interested to hear the discussion that kind of comes of this book, this exploration of all of that. Because as a parent, you know, I now know what my children don't. And I know how terrible it's going to be, and I don't want them to know. It's exactly why I was so surprised with my own parents' death, is because, you know, those magical ideas of our childhood are somehow built into our lives, and we defend them, even against logic, even against evidence. And I think there's some of that in this book, where I make a pitch with all the evidence that I still disbelieve much of it.
But when we're forced to think about mortality, it ultimately frees us.
In some ways, I agree. That was that way for me in war, actually. In my first tour, I commanded a light armored reconnaissance unit. And in doing so, I didn't believe I was mortal in some ways. I was surrounded by Marines. And they looked to me in some ways to be someone who was invulnerable. And you can believe your own myth, I've discovered. For that entire tour, I really didn't believe I could be killed. In my second tour, I was wounded within the first 2 weeks. The casualties were pretty stunning in Ramadi in 2005. And in that tour, I was so convinced that I would be killed that I also had the same lack of anxiety. Whether you are immortal or whether you're doomed kind of creates the same feeling that everything can be lost and nothing can be lost is settling in some ways. It didn't make me careless, but it didn't make me anxious, which I think is strange.
The book is Dust to Dust, and it is just a wonderful and beautifully written look at all the subjects that we've been talking about this morning. Again, Dust to Dust, it's published by Echo. Benjamin Bush, a great pleasure to have you on the program, and we look forward to your swing through the Hudson Valley.
Thank you. It'd be like a return home.
Benjamin, thank you very much.
Thank you, and be well.
Again, the name of the book is Dust to Dust, a memoir. It is published by Echo. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.